Your cell phone company has a digital record of everywhere you've been lately. So how easy should it be for law enforcement to get that information? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood. And hey, thank you for listening. We take this work seriously at Marketplace, but we like to have some fun too, making the news relatable and relevant in a way that's easy to understand without talking down to you. And most importantly, it's journalism you know you can trust to be accurate and unbiased. As a nonprofit news organization, we are on a mission that drives what we do every single day, to increase economic intelligence across the country. And now we're counting on your help so we can not only keep doing what we're doing, but do even more of it and get this kind of news and information in front of more people. So for as little as $5 a month, consider signing up as a Marketplace investor. Donate today at marketplace.org. And thanks. Today, the Supreme Court is hearing arguments in a case about whether law enforcement should have to get a warrant to access location information that your cell phone sends to towers and phone carriers. The case could set a major legal precedent around digital privacy, but Democratic Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon thinks Congress should pass a law first. He has a bill before Congress called the GPS Act, which would create clear rules around the use of location information. I spoke to Senator Wyden from his Washington office. Senator, what would this bill do?
It ensures that if the government wants location information, it's got to get a warrant. And the reality is, Molly, the laws just haven't kept up with the digital age. The Fourth Amendment protects Americans against unreasonable search and seizures, and that bumps up against the reality of life today, where we voluntarily give companies our information just by driving cars and carrying a cell phone.
And is this ultimately a question of trying to define who owns this data? Because previously, courts have said you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy if you turn that information, like you said, those bits and pieces, over to a third party, in this case, the phone company. Would this put ownership of that data back on the consumer on some level?
Well, what you're saying is you're empowering the consumer to deal with the realities of modern communications. And my legislation really picks up on what Justice Sotomayor has said. She argues it's time to rethink an idea known as the third-party doctrine. Basically, that has been a principle that kind of goes back to the days of phones of yesteryear that says that there's a principle that once you give a business information, you no longer have an expectation of privacy from the government. I and Justice Sotomayor think that this is just a bad fit for the times. This is a time when people reveal enormous amounts of personal information about themselves to these third parties just as they go about kind of the everyday activities of life. And I think that digital is different.
Now, you first introduced this bill or a bill like it back in 2011. It's been introduced at least four times since then and bipartisan, like you said, and yet it hasn't come out of committee. Why is it so hard to get traction on this?
It has been a bipartisan bill, but I think it's fair to say that the courts are clearly moving in our direction.
So if the courts start to make more and more decisions that are in line with your bill, that gives it a push?
There's no question. What we saw was the courts expressing concern about the reach here and beginning to recognize that in 1986, cell phones were the size of a Harry Potter, novel and cost a couple thousand dollars. And the people who wrote these laws out of the 80s didn't imagine a scenario where almost every American carries a phone in their pocket or a purse. I mean, we don't even see the word location appearing in these old laws. So yes, the court cases are moving in our direction. And what we would like to do is embed in federal law these kinds of protections for the digital age. If you really want listeners to have the protections in the digital age that the government has to get a warrant, except in these emergency circumstances, to collect their personal information, you're going to have to write it into the law. And what I've tried to stress is it's particularly important to get these laws written now because the American people no longer have the opportunity for more privacy, which they used to have when there were technological limits.
What do you think it will take to get this bill, you know, out of committee and pass?
What I think is going to be the key is a combination of more grassroots support, number one, a continuation of the trends we're seeing in the judicial process, and a growing number of tech-savvy legislators and legislators who understand, for example, when you talk to them about the third-party doctrine, that was telecommunications policy for yesteryear. There has to be a new set of rules that ensure that your privacy is not thrown in the trash can in the digital age.
That was sort of a good segue to the question of whether we also need a legislative solution to net neutrality and whether you might be involved in something like that.
What I can tell you is, having written the first net neutrality bill in the United States Senate, I think this issue goes right to the heart of what the American people want with respect to an open and free internet. Now, obviously, we would very much like to write into law strong, enforceable net neutrality protections. The folks on the far right don't want to agree to anything unless it's written by cable companies. That's really been their position.
That's Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon. Now, speaking of net neutrality, as we await the FCC's December 14th vote, Chairman Ajit Pai held an event in Washington on Tuesday to promote his proposal to roll back the Obama-era rules and even older restrictions on internet blocking and throttling. In his remarks, he opened an interesting new line of attack on the tech giants who have opposed rolling back net neutrality: Alphabet, Facebook, and Twitter. He said Twitter specifically is part of the problem, and that the big social networks and even Google actually have more power to control what you see, and that they do block and discriminate against some content. Pai said these companies are lobbying for restrictions on internet providers that they themselves would not want. And he is not wrong. Now, one could argue that perhaps both sides of the equation should have some rules instead of, you know, nobody having any. But there's no denying that Facebook right now probably does have more power over what you see than your ISP. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.